Spurs in full cry here. Let me
welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Exchange Podcast. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hey, dude.
And we're going to have Bardi with us very soon. He's not around at the moment, but he's going to join us. But first, Nathan and I are going to talk about the Man City game. Nathan, what the fuck was Pochettino thinking?
yeah, that's a tough one. So I talked on the last episode, previewing the game, and also on Twitter, I sort of said, I feel like we've used our sort of our secret go-to plan for facing City. We've sort of shown our hand and we won sort of Champions League quarterfinals, which is brilliant, but it gave Pep the upper hand. And I think that Pochettino, knowing that, wanting to change things up again with this sort of passive low block, I do think that there was like a fitness ploy involved. I think we wanted to sort of just absorb their pressure and wear them out for the first half and then sort of bring Lucas on and go at them in the second. But we couldn't handle their possession at all. And yeah, we got blown apart except from the scoreline.
So you basically think he was kind of hitting the reset button in the ways to beat City managerial outthinking one another race. You think he was saying, okay, well, we've done this, it worked once, now I have to go back to letting him think he's got the better of me so I can slowly build towards another win. Is that basically what you think was happening there?
Pretty much. I think that, yeah, if we'd have set up how we did against them last time, we'd probably have lost. Okay, we should have lost this time as well. But I think like it's better to sort of try new ideas and experiment with things, understanding that you're likely to lose, rather than just sort of continue to roll out what was once successful in the hope that it will again. I think that, you know, if you start from the position of it's fairly likely that we'll lose to City, it's just about taking big risks to try and find a different way to make it work for us.
I think I can sort of get on board with that theory. And then I sort of think about the team selection, and it makes no sense. So if you're going to play, like you said, a passive low block, and that's what it was, let's make no mistake about it. We defended deep, we pressed barely at all, and we had the most narrow back four I've seen us play in a long, long, long time, with basically Sissoko and Eriksen being asked to defend the flanks. And if we wanted to do that from the off, then surely Eric Dier would have played, or I don't know, someone else would have played other than the pressing players we've got, like Lamella, like Eriksen, like Moussa Sissoko, who can press defenders and harry them into making errors and then catching them on the counter-attack. So what's the justification then for playing the team we did? Is it simply that they are the fittest 11 we have at the moment?
Yeah, it may well be. So pre-match, I was quite happy with the starting 11. I thought it made sense to me. I sort of called Sissoko playing wide right. And then, yeah, in practice, that didn't work at all. So I can't now go back and say, you know, that was a terrible selection. Why would he have done that? Yeah, I mean, it definitely didn't work at all. I do think, you know, Sissoko wide right, because of their balance, and also Walker Peters being, you know, low on experience, sort of made sense in that regard. But we didn't give ourselves an out. I think that was the main issue there, wasn't it? So we didn't have an ability to counterattack, and as a result, we just sort of got penned in. Yeah, in that regard, probably he got something wrong there. I think it was defence first. It was thinking from the back forwards and just got things slightly wrong that way.
Interesting. So before we talk about individual players, because I think there are some individuals we need to touch upon, I had a conversation with a friend today, and this was basically the question I asked him. Would you rather play badly and scrape a point, or play a more encouraging game where you're quite pleased with the performance but come away with nothing?
Go on, what's yours, Chris? Go first.
So I think I would rather see progress in performance, because I like to think of it meaning like over the course of a season, over the course of several games, that will lead to ultimately us getting more points. Whereas I feel like we took a step backwards in the City game, not just in the how we beat City stakes, but it can't be great for our players' confidence. Yes, City are a great team, and you can in some ways chalk it off as a one-off game, but that can't have been a fun game for them to play in, knowing they're just going to sit and soak up pressure for pretty much 90 minutes, look like the second best team by a considerable margin, and not really learn a great deal about how to play as a team unit themselves. That can't have been great for their mentality. But then on the other hand, we got a point at the Etihad, and that's to be cherished and cheered. I don't know. Where what do you think?
Yeah, I thought that might be your angle, and I do generally put performance before results. But like, we are what, 5 years? We're in the sixth year of Pochettino now. We're several years into Pochettino's charge at the club. Like, the players know the system, and we know it works, and we know what aspects do and don't work, and we've been to a Champions League final. There's no need to establish our style. There's no need to prove anything. So this is Manchester City we're talking about. We're talking about the best team in the world, right? So based on all of that, I'm happy to take the terrible performance and the result.
So you're not overly concerned for the future. You just think this is
no, of course not. Of course, because it's not about what happened. Sorry, mate, I've talked all over you there. It's not about what happened last weekend, right? It's about the years we put in to get here. I'm not worried about next weekend. Not specifically because it's Newcastle. I'm not worried about the future generally because of what we've established over the years.
You are making me feel better about this. I've been pretty mad about that performance. I did not enjoy it in any... Like, I think that the thing that annoyed me is I couldn't see what we were trying to achieve. And Pochettino has made some balmy decisions in the past, but you've always been able to sort of see what he was trying to do. And I felt in this game that, like I said, he didn't pick a team to sit deep and not press, but that's what he did. And then when City were just utterly dominating and it was like a matter of time before they scored, he didn't do anything to affect that. They kept dominating on both flanks, particularly on Danny Rose's side, where Bernardo Silva was getting so much space and then De Bruyne was coming and picking up the ball in those pockets of space. And he did nothing to adjust that either. I really found it baffling. But like you say, maybe he was just saying, let's, you know, soak up this pressure, try and catch him on a counter, scrape a draw. And if that's what he intended to do, then, you know, we did do it ultimately. But that won't happen again. In a game where you lose 3.23 to 0.11 on XG, you will not draw many of those matches 2-2. That is, I mean, we should have lost that game 3 or 4-0. I feel like I'm being way too depressing because I'm so optimistic about the season. Like, we've just been having a chat off air and we both think we've got a really strong chance of finishing second, which would be amazing given you know, the teams who are around us and some of the spending power around us. That's incredible that we're in this position. So please don't think we're too downbeat. It's just this game irked me somewhat. Let's talk about some of the individual performances then. Firstly, let's just mention Kevin De Bruyne because that was insane. He just gets better and better. Where do you rank him amongst the Premier League's best ever?
I think normally when people talk about best ever, they like to talk about longitude and he hasn't been in the league that long. I'm less minded that way. I simply look at the performances that he has given. If it's just not over a tiny sample, and yeah, I mean, he's absolutely ridiculous. He's right up there with the very best as far as I'm concerned.
And the way he's now kind of changed position and become essentially a free eight is quite a remarkable transition as well. He makes it look so easy. He's very good off the ball, but it's on the ball where his quality shows, and he is dangerous literally every time he has the ball at his feet, and it's insane. So those two crosses were just nuts. The accuracy, the weight of the pass, the vision, just everything. He's glorious to watch. But let's talk about Spurs' players. How did you think Kyle Walker-Peters did?
I was very happy with Kyle Walker-Peters. I think, given the context, given how much City focused on their attacking down his side, I don't think because of a weakness particularly with him, but because of their strength and their orientation, he matched Sterling over the course of 90 minutes, which is really all you can ask from any fullback. Is to do that, is to win as many as you lose. And you're going to get dribbled by, occasionally, an absolutely absurdly rapid and skilled winger from time to time. And yeah, he also lost him for the goal. That's the only mistake I'm worried about. But like you said, a ridiculous cross. Yeah, I think it would be easy to say, oh, he got beat a couple of times. Oh, we lost him for the goal. He had a poor game. But I think most of the time he was winning.
Yeah. And what was nice was quite early on in the game, he actually imposed himself on Sterling a few times by actually running at him and pushing him back up the pitch. Like, he was one of the few players to, certainly early in the game, try and take it to City a little bit. And that was quite encouraging as well. On the goal, like, yeah, I definitely think there's a significant amount of blame on him. But also the way he'd been asked to defend so narrow, which was definitely by design and not just him choosing to do that. I think that kind of, you can let him off a little because he was in the position he was meant to be in, and Sterling just read that and made a very good run to get on the end of an exceptional cross. So you kind of, in a way, hold your hands up and say, yes, City just did very well in that moment. And perhaps we should have had a player covering round at the back post. But yeah, you know, a more experienced right back would have seen the run and dropped his position slightly and probably dealt with it. But like you say, Sterling is insanely good, and that's probably going to happen once or twice a game. So he was not bad by any stretch. And I think I was quite encouraged by his performance as well. Then we had Ndombele in the middle, who I've seen sort of mixed reviews of. Where do you stand on his performance?
I was quite happy with him. I think there were, I've seen really, really positive reviews on his performance. And I think they've sort of got a bit, he didn't, like, obviously there's a greater tactical aspect here where, like we've discussed, we set up to play a passive low block. So yeah, of course he didn't impose himself on the game because that's not the way we approached it. But people were really happy with his, you know, his dribble completion, his pass completion. And yeah, what he did do was impressive. But I would like to have seen him, regardless of the tactical approach, be in the game more. So I'm very happy with it. There's obviously a ton of promise with everything that he does. But this isn't like a megastar performance for me by any chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would agree with that. The things he did pretty well. There was plenty he didn't do because of the style of football we were playing. And that's fine-ish. I was not impressed with Eriksen or Sissoko in the roles that they were given.
Nope.
And I think I'm not alone in saying that. But the player who stood out from a negative front to me was Danny Rose. I feel like Rose, his decision-making was awful, really awful. And I don't know if it's because he didn't know how to play the role that Pochettino gave him. I mean, to be fair, the role that he gave the fullbacks in this game was absurd and left them in two minds constantly. But I felt like Rose in particular suffered from that positional sort of... he just wasn't sure whether to go out and meet his man or to tuck in and mark. And that caused him problems throughout the whole game and left lots of space on that side for Bernardo, who is another excellent player. Was there anyone else who kind of caught your eye for a negative or positive reason?
Eriksen, who everyone knows, I'm like his number one fanboy, and I make that video and I'm always talking about how horrifically underrated he is in the Spurs fan base. And I'll even make excuses for him now in that this is obviously not his game. He never really had any opportunities to be an attacking player. But I was disappointed with him defensively. Like you pointed out, Rose there, I would say that Rose's biggest issue was a lack of support from Eriksen, who normally is, again, underrated defensively. I think he's quite a very, very smart presser of the ball, but I think he was switched off today. And maybe I'm sort of leaning towards that whole, you know, body language and penalties nonsense we had over the summer.
Do you think that's justification then for Eriksen not starting our opening day fixture? Maybe it's a fitness thing and he's just not quite there yet.
Yeah, could well be, you know. And the thing with saying Eriksen started, look how well he did when he came off the bench is, yeah, but he came off the bench. And when you do that, you're a significant advantage, especially with regards to fitness. I'm always, despite the performance we've just seen from him, always pro starting Eriksen whenever it is safe to do so, whenever he's fit enough to play. I would certainly like to see him play against Newcastle. You know, this again, he's a player we've had a long time, we know what he gives us. This isn't anything that's going to change our minds about anything, just that it was frustrating to have picked him up so much and then he drops that.
No, I'm with you. So we had Lamella getting a goal and an assist. The goal was pretty smartly taken. Like, it was a very strange goal in that Ederson was massively over to one side of his goal, leaving a gaping hole on the opposite side. But Eriksen was quite smart to use, I think it was Otamendi, as a sort of shield to curve up. Eriksen. Lamella was very smart Eriksen. To use him as a shield and curl it into the corner. Having received what was a very nice pass from Ndombele, who kind of spotted that he was between the lines and got it to him nice and quickly. And then also took a really good corner for Lucas to attack. So that was encouraging. But Lamella, throughout the rest of the game, kind of did a lot of chasing around. He was like the one player who did press a fair amount, and he achieved very little. And what did you make of him?
Yeah, when you press alone, you press very ineffectually. Yes. That's the Alexis Sanchez story. That goal, he's had a few of those where the shot comes not when you're expecting it, when the keeper's unsighted and it looks just sort of like he's passed it into the back of the net, suddenly in the middle of like a frantic game and it doesn't make any sense. But yeah, he has a few of those. Again, Lamella, a player we've had a long time. We know what his strengths are. We know what his weaknesses are. We're glad that he's fit. Probably he's not going to be a first 11 player. He's not going to be a first 11 player, is he, when everyone's back in? But he's good to have him in the squad. Good to see a decent attacking performance from him when everyone else was so quiet.
Yeah. And the other player who's now going to be pushing for a starting place is Lucas, who came on and within literal seconds had headed a goal in from a tremendous leap. And he's shown that before. We kind of said, like really early on in his Spurs career, the thing that everyone picked up on was he's really good in the air for a little guy. He gets up well. He has a spring on him. And he's very committed to winning headers as well. And he's actually a weapon from corners. Like, he's a really impressive player to have charging in and getting up early. And he did great to win that header. I'm not sure he did a lot else in the game. Like, he tried a few dribbles and they didn't really happen. He's now going to be pushing for starts. Is he still a super sub for you, or do you think he should be starting games?
No, I don't think he was, for me, first 11 last season. I think he's behind Son, and now we've strengthened the midfield. Look, he's really good. I'm not trying to pretend that he's a bad player, but I just, it's good to have good players who aren't starters. It's okay to have that role. And that's why if you look at, I think that we've been talking about like Eriksen and Lamella and Kane's performance based on the way that we played and everything. I feel like there's not a huge correlation between like how well we're performing as a team and the likelihood of Lucas scoring. I feel like his performances can often be completely independent to the team, whereas a lot of the rest of our squad are quite sort of system focused players.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm with you there.
Which is, you know, as much a strength as it is a weakness, because if you're having a bad game, you might want to bring him on just because he might magic up a goal from nowhere.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Newcastle, and I've been speaking to our friend, Christian Hellage, who had lots to say on the upcoming game and their performances so far.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Delighted to be joined once again by football writer, football expert, nice bloke from Twitter, and above all else, a Newcastle United fan. It's Kristen Hennage once again. Kristen, thank you for joining us. First things first, how has the season started for Newcastle?
Oh, wow. Try not to swear. Not great, to quote Mad Men. Not great, Bob. Not great.
Are you worried about the direction it's going under Steve Bruce at this point, or is it too early to say that?
It's funny. That's kind of the debate right now in the Northeast. Is it too early? There's a lot of local press here that say give him 10 games, give him, you know, some kind of clean slate to work through. And the other side of the argument, which is kind of where I fall, is he has a whole career that you can look back on, and unfortunately it's not a great career, especially in the Premier League. I am a little bit concerned. I didn't personally, nothing against him as a guy, I don't really know him in that context, but I was not very inspired by the appointment from a football perspective from day one, and it's, to be frank, it's not one that inspires confidence, I think.
It did feel like a fairly desperate appointment. Is there any kind of glimmer of hope? How are the new boys looking that you've signed over the summer?
Yeah, that's been an interesting one as well. I think Johansson has looked a little bit isolated. There's clearly something there. There's clearly not just a physicality, but a skill and an ability to carry the ball that I think could be really beneficial. He's, to me, in certain ways, a lesser player than Rondon, but in other ways, a more mobile version, so you get a different kind of target man. I don't know if he's as suited to that role as Rondon was last season. So Maximan is kind of everything that I think football Twitter will tell you about him, which is he's exciting, but he's inconsistent. And I think you kind of saw that in the brief cameo he had with Arsenal, which was someone that wanted to go past people, wanted to create things, had a confidence to him, but maybe wasn't always that kind of able to deliver what he wanted to do in his own head. And then you've got a pair of fullbacks / wingbacks, Emil Kraf and Jethro Willems. I like Willems. He seems more mobile, more aggressive, more attack-minded than Matt Ritchie is, able to go past the man. Kraf, I feel a bit harsh judging him, albeit by the same standards I am with Willems, but he looked okay. I mean, from what I had been able to kind of research on him and watch, you know, through the internet and things, he struck me as someone who was not as physically blessed as our other fullbacks, but could seem to put a cross in, had maybe a bit more attacking quality to him. But yeah, it's, as is kind of the theme, I think, of Newcastle this year, it's very much, yeah, that'll do, I guess. It's all very much right slap bang in the middle of the thermometer of excitement.
Yeah. And what do you think your starting lineup against Spurs is likely to be? I know you made a change in the midfield in your last match, so you had Key played one game, didn't he, and Longstaff played the other. And what's the likely lineup for the Spurs match?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because that again is another sort of burning question. So the last game they went 3-5-2. And they've had a midfield three, which is Shelvey, Hayden, I think it was Key on Saturday, and then Longstaff came in. And to be honest, that just doesn't work, because it isolates Shillington and Almiron, because it means Almiron basically has to pick the ball up from deep, support the attack as well, and it's a ludicrous idea, I think. But I appreciate why it was attempted, at least so far, because they want the most out of Shelvey, because he is one of the higher earners. He's on about 80 grand a week. I think, and I say think with a dash of hope as well, they will go back to something a little bit more reminiscent of last season, which is a 3-4-3. So you'll have the defence, which for me I don't think will change a great deal, which is Dubravka, Shaw, Lascelles, Dummett and Tom Lejeune can come back from injury. And then I would say right wing back, maybe Manquillo, because I don't think he's done anything to deserve losing his place. And then Ritchie, because he's familiar, although I'd be confident in trying Willems there just to see what happens. And then a midfield pairing of Hayden, who is quite a mobile destroyer type with a bit of box-to-box to him. And then probably Longstaff. And then it comes to that front three. If Saint-Maximin has recovered from the hamstring strain he had, I would put him, Almiron and Joelinton, and just essentially play a very basic game, which is we defend compactly with that back seven plus the goalkeeper, and then we attack with that front three and any kind of one who can get up and support them.
And immediately, when you start reading off that lineup, that sounds so much more balanced than the lineup you've actually been playing. It feels like you've got a decent base there to start from defensively, and then three mobile, quite exciting attacking players who can presumably try and do some damage on the counter-attack.
Exactly. That's really what, if you look at the back stretch of last season when Newcastle started to pick up results and really just pull themselves away from the bottom sort of six, it was all about the fact that they could transition really quickly. Almiron was the difference here, because he, to me, I saw comparisons to Ozil and things like this. That wasn't what I saw with him at Atlanta. He was, to me, a slightly poor man's Angel Di Maria. Someone who picks the ball up, drives quickly through central areas, and links things from midfield to attack. And that's what he did expertly. Yet, didn't get an assist, didn't get a goal. You want that for a player that costs that much. And I think it will realistically come at some point. But his influence, just in terms of getting the ball to Rondon and Perez for them two to do stuff, it was massively instrumental. And at the same time, whether by luck or design, the squad that Benitez had built, you had Shaw, who's a very confident ball-playing centre-back, Lejeune, who can hit a pass pretty decently across distance, and then Lascelles, who's a bit more of an old-school head-em and kick-em type centre-back. And then the midfield, we definitely did get a bit lucky with Longstaff just emerging and showing up really well on some physical tests that suggested he could play Premier League football, and him forming a good partnership with Hayden. I think that's the frustration and where a lot of let's say, the criticism of Steve Bruce is emanating from is that it seemed to supporters that it was painfully obvious what to do with this team, which is don't change anything. You can't do anything with the fact that Perez is gone. That was a release clause. He chose to go. I actually don't blame them at all. The club is at this point going nowhere anytime soon. So they signed this replacement of Saint-Maximin, who again is a different type of player. He's closer to Almiron than Perez, in my opinion. But at least, again, you've got that front three. You could even, if you wanted to, try and put Gale in that Perez position. Someone who's a poacher, who wants to find space, be tricky. Not as good, I would say, a dribbler in tight spaces. But again, can work off that big man and have that type of role. So it's a bit frustrating that he's tried this sort of 3-5-2 or 5-3-2 because it just doesn't work. And to be honest, Shelby hasn't done anything in the brief start to the season we've had to justify his position, because I love him as a passer. I don't know about you, but I've always had a thing for midfielders that can really pass a ball and find space. It's a beautiful thing to watch. He does nothing off the ball, though, or very little, I should say. I shouldn't be so, sensationalist about it. He just doesn't offer enough off the ball as part of a three-man midfield, and he doesn't have, be it the determination or the legs, whatever, to get up and support those attacks. So then you've got potentially Hayden who has to do that, or Longstaff that has to do that, and then that leaves a gap, and it just doesn't work. The 3-4-3 worked really well for them, and I'm just surprised he's abandoned it at all, even though I get that you have to try and find a role for Jonjo Shelvey. I think if it was me, I would just be honest and say, look, I don't see where he fits in this team. I'm sorry.
I agree with you. I feel like the shape that Bruce has adopted is largely to accommodate Shelvey. So he obviously wants someone in midfield who can pass the ball, and there's absolutely no doubt that Shelvey can find a pass. He's long and short range. He's a fantastic passer. But like you say, he hasn't got the legs to do, or perhaps the aptitude to do the rest of the work required for a two-man midfield role. So they're putting runners in around him to make it an achievable midfield. And as a result, there's one less attacking player on the pitch, which means, like you said, Almiron's dropping deep, leaving Joelinton completely isolated, which is a bit of a recipe for disaster. With all of this in mind, what do you see as your sort of key strengths and weaknesses, and how might Spurs exploit your weaknesses?
I think it's difficult because actually a lot of the strengths I would have taken from last season haven't really been present this season. But on their day, they can be a compact, frustrating side to play against. I think you saw that at Wembley last season.
Yeah.
It was a narrow game, and it was, in the end, kind of only decided by the fact that Dubravka made a mistake, which, again, I think is a little bit unlike him. But they can be this sort of very compact, a little bit like Wolves, I think, in certain ways. Like, a team that will shut off the space and suck the air out of their own half so that you have to find a space where there necessarily isn't any. And I think that's why someone like Son was so decisive last season, because I think he does do really well in those areas. In terms of, you know, the heading and all that kind of stuff, again, they're very good with dealing with crosses. They've kind of shifted, actually, this summer. They looked at fullbacks that were a little bit taller, because I think they noticed that occasionally they could get done in behind with a long diag in behind Yedlin, who's a little bit shorter, and stuff like that. So I think they've tried to address that. If I'm basing it just off what I've seen this season, they're horrible in transition this season. They're very easy to break on. And I look at Ndombele, who I've talked to Flav about, and just love everything that he represents. Eriksen, Lo Celso, Son, who we talked about. Even Lucas Moura, there's pace and there's energy and there's people who can find passes in there. And I just think, is it going to be a scenario where Newcastle flood forward and then Spurs just pick them off on the counter? And it almost kind of plays into Tottenham's hands. I know that Benitez has got a lot of criticism for maybe being ultra defensive against these bigger teams. You know, the Man City game is probably the one that springs to mind. But you look at that Norwich game, I think they only have 33% possession. And I have no desire to patronise Norwich at all as a newly promoted side. I wouldn't expect any team outside the top six to be closer than that. And it just wasn't. And they created a number of chances that if it's a better finish, or, you know, it's just kind of attacked with a bit more composure, that's a goal. And ifs and buts could go the other way, because Joelinton misses a good chance, Kraft misses a good chance. But at that point, okay, it's 5-3 or 5-2 instead of a 3-1. And that's the concern that I've seen sort of sprinkled across the fan base this week is we could be on for an absolute pace at the weekend here, because you're a very good football inside. You just took City to the wall. You've got Lo Celso to come in who's going to want to impress, and it's at home. That's a really bad sort of mix for us in a season that, granted, it's only, you know, two games in, 180 minutes in, but it's starting to feel a lot like the year McLaren came in. And it was this championship coach who just didn't have the sort of smarts or the nuance for the Premier League. We trusted a young forward at the time, Mitrovic and Arjo Linton, to come in along with a few young prospects, or prospects might be the wrong word, talented players who would become better, like Wijnaldum, to come in and change things. And we just were naive the entire season, and we had no leaders, no real character. I think this team has more character than that group. Lascelles is a more prominent figure. But even that, you can sort of tub-thump your way through a couple of weeks and say, we need to be better and we need to do this, like they did after the Norwich game and all this, and do these extra training sessions. But I think, as you and I know, the Premier League now, it's a detailed machine. You need to be organised. You need to have a plan. You need to almost have a plan on top of a plan in case that goes wrong. And I just think that, for me, the problem I have with Bruce, his coaching has moved on massively since he was last in the Premier League. You look at just the quality of what Farke's doing. You look at even Chris Wilder, who's got these overlapping centre-backs that you're reading about every week. These are coaches that are coming with innovative ideas, and I just don't know what his innovative is. It seems to be 4-2-3-1, and that's it. You don't really hear anything past that. And I think, for me personally, that's the huge frustration is, I have no issue with getting a coach from the Championship, not at all, but not that coach. I'd have taken Graham Potter, I'd have taken a bold attempt at Chris Wilder, and I've even taken, you know, a long shot at trying to get Daniel Farke. Just someone that had some kind of idea and had shown an ability to really kind of think. I just haven't seen that with Bruce on a very tactical level. It seems, dare I say, very rooted in the old football idea of, I just give them a pat on the back and send them out there in the hope that, you know, things go well.
Oh, mate, I really feel for you. It sounds like things are only going in one direction. And, I mean, the sad thing is, you look at Newcastle's squad, and there's some quality there. I think Dubravka's a fantastic goalkeeper. I think Lo Celso, who you mentioned, is a really good defender. I like the look of Almiron, although obviously he's new to the league and still needs to adapt. So there are some good players, and Longstaff is another fantastic prospect. The problem is, you've got to get something out of the group. You can't just rely on individuals, particularly individuals who haven't even really been playing in the Premier League for a particularly long amount of time. They haven't even adapted to themselves yet, yet alone got used to how the new signings are going to adapt. It's tough to see how things get better for Newcastle, but, you know, for your sake and the sake of Newcastle fans, I hope they do, because I think it could otherwise be a long and fairly miserable season. I'm intrigued. I was kind of, from the Spurs perspective, I was thinking Newcastle were just basically going to camp in their own half and try and counter every now and again. And that's often when Spurs are at their worst, when they're forced to try and break a team down and look for clever passes. And I was all for starting Son on the basis that he's really good at shooting off either foot, and we might get a bit of space in front of the defence if they're deep, and we might end up relying on long-range effort. But I'm kind of hopeful now that you said that there's a chance that Newcastle could go a bit more gung-ho and try and play some football, and Spurs could pick them off and counter. That makes me feel a lot more confident. Otherwise, I was thinking this could go down to the wire and we'd be looking to scrape a 1-0 late on, which would always worry me with Spurs, particularly against Newcastle, who we seem to have had problems against in the last couple of years. I mean, for your sake, I do hope things get better, but perhaps not from this weekend.
That's the thing that I noticed, is that last season there was so much appreciation for, say, you know, Shaw going forward, what that meant for everyone else. And if you move this block, this one has to do this. And unfortunately, I think for some fans, there's a quite depressing element to it. So, well, if we go down, if we stay down, then maybe he goes. You know, maybe the man upstairs finally leaves. So it's odd to have to bet against your football club. I'm very careful of being too sensations, because I think right now with Bury and Bolton, there's significantly worse situations to be in. But I think apathy is perhaps a good word for it.
That's a very rational and reasonable take. Listen, Kristen, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to get some kind of inside knowledge on Newcastle, and all the best for the game at the weekend.
Thank you, Kristen, once again for joining us to talk about Newcastle. Nathan, Newcastle, what do you make of them? Are you worried about this? I mean, it feels to me like the ideal game for us to be going into, given the situation from last weekend.
Yes, quite possibly on that particular point. My view of Newcastle is that, like, there have been two recent phases to Newcastle. The first is the time when they had a very good manager in Rafa Benitez, and the second is the time where they've invested really smartly in their squad. Mm. And those are two separate eras, which is not funny for Newcastle fans, but from a distance, quite ridiculous. They're obviously not in a great... You don't want to be too over callous saying this team is terrible, because you know what happens when you do that, but they're not in a great space at all at the moment.
They don't know what they are yet, I think, under Bruce, and that's the problem. Will they ever is one thing to say, because Steve Bruce is a very bad Premier League manager. But at the weekends, they got this striker, Joel Linton, who doesn't seem too bad, but he's completely isolated, so they didn't have anyone supporting him from midfield. Almiron seems to be playing really deep and trying to take on the whole of the opposition, which leaves Joel Linton totally isolated, which isn't a great look for them. In my opinion, like, we couldn't hope for a better fixture to kind of get the pulses racing again and get some players back on track and back into some form. Plus, we have lots of players potentially coming back. So Son could make his first appearance of the season after serving his suspension. We've got Lo Celso, who's presumably now pushing for starts, having kind of ingratiated himself into the team. Lucas, as we just mentioned, who has come on and scored and now will fancy his chances. And then Vertonghen, who's missed the opening two games due to fitness reasons, but presumably will want his place back. What do you think the team will look like, Nath?
I think it's probably still bench for Lo Celso. I think he's probably got a couple more, because obviously he wasn't exactly involved. There's a highlights video of his game.
Oh, that was amazing. I loved that.
Which is, yeah, two touches, being fouled, handshake, done, 1 minute 30 video. Jokes aside, obviously, I think that he will come off the bench a couple more times and actually play some football before he starts. Son, yeah, could well be straight back in. It's not like he's lacking for fitness, but, you know, he had a good pre-season, so it'd be good to have him. And I really, really hope Vertonghen is starting games soon, because I'm worried if he's not. Also, he's in my fantasy team, so I need to start getting those points.
Wow. Yeah, I would take him out soon.
It's draft, mate. It's draft. I can't just be dropping massive players like Vertonghen.
I forgot you're only doing the draft league. Yeah, you're stuck with him. Yeah, you need him in. Sanchez has been fine, to be fair, in the opening two games and hasn't done a lot wrong. So if Poch is sticking by his old meritocracy principles, then maybe Sanchez keeps his place. But, you know, like you say, Vertonghen does need to be playing games. They are our best centre-back partnership. Whilst we still have both the Belgians at the club, let's make use of the Belgians.
Yeah.
And that means hopefully he'll start against Newcastle. I'm intrigued to see whether Eric Dier or Ben Davis, who are now both fully fit, I'm intrigued to see whether one or both of them start. I think Davis is more likely than Dier, simply because we have so many options in midfield now, and I thought Rosa had a really bad game against City. So Davis kind of makes sense from a kind of rotation/experimental aspect. I guess there's also the option that Rose could still leave before the European transfer window closes. I think Son will start. I feel like it makes sense for Son to come straight back in. He had a really good preseason, like you said. He was buzzing around, looked pumped, looked like he was fresh and ready to go. So I'm looking forward to seeing him back. It sounds like Dele and Sessegnon won't quite be ready, but they're both on their road to recovery, which is great. And you wrote about Dele this week.
I did. A summary of my August takes so far are Ericsson, he's pretty good. Dele, he's pretty good too. And I don't think that is sort of like a coincidence. I think that we had such a problem season in midfield, obviously, last season, that it's made out all of our attacking players look pretty bad, and suddenly, you know, we're saying, oh, we need to improve the players we've got in attack. I think we've got a really special bunch of attacking players, and Dele is certainly one of those. So obviously I want you to go away and read the article, but I essentially talked about sort of the developments he went through last season, operating in a more supportive role. While it's perceived that he's having off games, I actually think he did a lot of good for us. And beyond that, I think that he'll return to a more attacking role this season, and we'll see more of, well, we'll see more of the goals, basically, which is what we all want to see.
Yeah. I felt the same about Eriksen as well, before I kind of accepted that he's probably going to leave, which I'm still really sad about. I felt like the signing of Ndombele, I need to get used to saying his name, God, Ndombele would push both Eriksen and Dele back into more forward-facing roles, and I think that long-term would be great for both of them. And I, yeah, would love to see Dele like score 15 goals this year. That would be lovely. So we've probably got not a lot more to say about Newcastle. We think it's going to be a good game for us. We're at home. We haven't beaten them at home for a while, so it'd be nice to kind of rack up a decent win. Before we go, have a quick chat about the loanees, because we sent quite a few players out on loan. So in the past like week, we've sent George Marsh out to Leyton Orient in League 2, Anthony Georgiou to Ipswich in League 1, and Jack Rowles to Cambridge United in League 2. And two of those have made their debuts already. So Rowles started for Cambridge, and by all accounts was one of the stars of the show.
A wizard.
Yeah, I love that tweet from Cambridge United. So they tweeted, is this guy you've lent us a wizard or something, that Spurs official? And from the highlights I've seen, like, they had every right to be saying that, because he was playmaking and looking very, very good. I mean, yeah, you said you've had some bad takes so far this past week or whatever. I mean, my take was that Jack Rowles could play for a Championship club, and then he went to a League Two club. So I was kind of looking stupid, but you know, what I like is that it's just until January, and then Spurs can reassess and decide what to do with him then, whether they want to push him up to a League One club or maybe even a Championship club. Just getting him into a team that is going to play him every week is the crucial thing at this point in his development. And so far, so good under Colin Calderwood, ex-Spurs Colin Calderwood at Cambridge United. So all the best to Jack. I hope he scored lots of goals between now and January. And Anthony Georgiou came off the bench for Ipswich and apparently completely turned the game in their favour. I think they came from 2-0 down to 2-2, which is great. Really.
Did he play on the wing?
He played on the wing, and he attacked lots and put lots of crosses in, which I think is like perfectly suited to League One. And I think he'll do a good job there.
I don't want to be too harsh. I feel like Amos and Marsh and Georgiou, Carter Vickers and probably Sterling as well, are all players who we are signing to new contracts and loaning out just as we increase their value to sell them off at a later stage. Whereas with Rowles, I think that he does have a genuinely decent chance of making the squad at some point.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that is smart business sense from Spurs. And I kind of wish we would do it with more of our young players. Like, for example, Marcus Edwards is now in the last year of his contract and is likely to be sold to a European team, or at the very least loaned out again until the end of his contract. And it's such a pity that we haven't like tied him down to a long contract and got him out to a good loan club years ago, rather than leaving it so late. And this feels to me like a really good way of developing players, making money, and, you know, the occasional time someone surprises you, comes good, and then becomes a first teamer will be a pleasant surprise. And there's kind of,
sure,
in my eyes, very little downside to doing this. I think Amos is the one who probably has the most chance of those you mentioned. I think there's something about Amos, and he's a bit of a late developer because he didn't really grow quickly. He's always been quite small and has only recently put on muscle mass. And so there might still be something there. But yeah, certainly with Carter Vickers, Sterling, Marsh and Georgiou, I feel like, you know, they will be good Football League players and probably not up to Spurs' standards. But hopefully with Rowles, if he can, you know, if he can have a good season this year, then he could get some chances in pre-season again next year and impose himself on the first team squad. You know, it's possible. The other player who is a transfer target of note is Fernando Llorente. So Football Insider today have said that they suspect that Spurs have made him an offer, which he's rejected at the moment because it's not as much money as he was getting paid last season. But does that surprise you that we're making an offer for Llorente? two-year-enter. I shouldn't say four-year-enter because he hasn't got a club.
Yes, you can't register new players. But I think he's like effectively deemed as already registered with us because we had him last season. So like he can't sign for another English club, but until the window closes, he can still sign for a foreign club. I think he's sort of playing his options. So he's got our offer on the table, which is a decrease or apparently a significant decrease on what we were paying him last season. And he's going to sort of see if he can get anything better elsewhere. And if he doesn't, I imagine it's fairly likely that he will be back with us once the Spanish window closes.
How would you feel about that?
Not great. We did this end of last season. We talked about Llorente, and I said, yeah, you know, he's a different option. And Bardi went, no, come on, we're beyond having
a battering ram of a centre forward.
Yeah, we should be above Llorente.
Yeah,
but maybe we're not.
And we've just been talking about, you know, Lucas Moura and how he gets games. And one of the ways he gets games is if we don't have Fernando Llorente.
Yep.
Because he can cover that striking role. Plus, Parrot, we've got the development of Troy Parrott to think of. Yeah. So there are many reasons to not sign Fernando Llorente, I guess.
Offer that money to Eriksen, you know?
Yeah. Give Eriksen Llorente's wages. Speaking of Bardi, so we did say at the start of the podcast that Bardi would be joining us, but so he's been out for drinks tonight, and he told us that he would be ready to record at a certain time, and he's not ready to record at a certain time, and so we've said, no, Bardi, if you can't be here at the time you said, you'll be locked out of our chat, and you will not be allowed in the podcast. So I'm imagining him now outside tapping on the window, There's snow falling around him, and he's saying, let me in. I'm cold out here. I want to come and talk about Llorente too. Nobody. Not this time.
He treats this place like it's the fighting cock.
He does. He can come and go as he pleases. Like this is very different. This is organized. There are spreadsheets.
I dress up in formal wear to record. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I've got a tie on and nothing else. We're getting delirious now, Nathan. We better leave it there, hadn't we?
Just thinking about Llorente is done to you.
It's been good to talk, mate, and we'll be back very soon with more Extra Inch podcasts.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davy Shambles and his SoundCloud D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.